Alan, hello.
Good morning, Jim.
We often ask our Kiwis who are calling home what they do in their downtime, but I've seen your recent itinerary involving New York, Prague, Seoul, Japan, and I would suggest you have no downtime in your life.
Well, I do take my running shoes with me when I'm travelling so that I can get a little bit of exercise and get out and see a bit of the places that I'm travelling to. But, yeah, it's a pretty packed schedule.
At least tell us you collect air miles for all this good work you're doing around the globe, Alan.
Well, I'm trying to cut down on my carbon footprint, which is why I actually moved over to the Northern Hemisphere, because it's closer to all the international UN meetings and where I'm most needed.
We want to talk to you about life in Prague, of course, but you're currently in Seoul attending the Seoul Peace Conference, Peace Beyond the Walls. Now, am I right? You're due to speak with Helen Clark and other international voices. That's coming up for you.
Oh, well, Helen's a keynote speaker, and I'm a panellist, so I'm not actually speaking on the same panel as her. But it's an interesting initiative because it's the city of Seoul, which is organising this conference and basically saying cities and civil society can take a role in breaking down these political walls. It's not just up to the governments to be able to deal with these peace, security and disarmament issues.
You are totally committed to peace. How would you describe what you are to people when you meet them, what your mission is?
Yes, I would say that I'm a peace advocate. I believe that war and violence is negative at whatever level that is, and that it's possible to be able to resolve our conflicts, whether they're at home or in our neighbourhood or internationally, through our peaceful means rather than threatening to blow up the planet with nuclear weapons or having war or other fights.
Understood. And by and large, what does this consist of in your life, day to day, week to week, month to month?
So my first career was as a peace educator. So I was teaching conflict resolution in schools. But I've taken those principles now into the international realm. And so I'm working as a freelance policy advisor, pushing governments and the United Nations approaches that are, I think, more peaceful. When we first started the campaign on, you know, eliminating nuclear weapons, we were really focusing on how bad the weapons are. You know, they're horrific. But more and more we realized that we have to do a positive approach and encourage those who still think they need nuclear weapons for security that there are better ways of having security than threatening to blow each other up.
Do you retain your optimism? That's the obvious question, or one obvious question to ask you through all of this, because, of course, you look at the world and it's in a bit of a discouraging state. How do you keep your spirits up?
But we also have so many times when governments and peoples are resolving their conflicts peacefully. And so I look at the positives and say, let's reinforce those.
Your CV is just really honours, achievements and awards. You've been nominated a number of times for the Nobel Peace Prize. Is the pursuit of peace what you've been doing since graduating from Waikato in the 1980s?
Yeah, since graduating, I have been involved in peace in some form, whether it's peace education or in international policy work.
Right, I'll get back to peace. But you're from Tauranga originally?
That's correct.
Okay, and that's home for you when you're back in New Zealand?
Oh, yes.
Right. And how often do you get back?
I try to get back once a year, but it's not always possible.
Right. You're based in Prague now, the capital of the Czech Republic. How long have you lived there for?
About 3 years now. Berta von Suttner, the first woman to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, was born in Prague, and she was instrumental in getting the first international court established, the Permanent Court of Arbitration, as a way that countries could resolve their disputes rather than going to wars. So there was that, and there's also a romantic interest. My girlfriend's there.
Right. Alan Ware is calling home. So it's fairly chilly in Prague at the moment. I noticed the temperature's peaking at about 4 or 5 degrees. But they say it's a warm city in another sense to visit at any time of year. What do you like most about your life in Prague?
Oh, Prague is beautiful in terms of the architecture. It was saved from the Second World War. It wasn't bombed, so they've got all the historical buildings there. It's also really designed for foot traffic, so you can walk around the centre and very few cars in the centre. And then around that, it's a very good public transport system. Yeah, the people are pretty friendly. You know, they love their beer, and there's lots of beer gardens, and they like relaxing. But I think there's also, it's quite a hub of intellectualism as well. You know, like some very, you know, famous poets and musicians and artists have come out of Prague.
I bet they do Christmas well in Prague.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Okay, so it's a Pilsner paradise I was reading. I read about the beer. There's a flip side to that beer culture. I see in recent years there have been huge increases in the number of visitors, especially from England, coming to Prague for stag do's, hen do's, rowdy do's. Are the locals a bit resentful towards the number of people who, you know, go on the pub crawls in Prague now?
Well, I think it's mixed. I think in one sense there's a positive aspect to it, is that the people going on these pub crawls, they can actually walk from place to place. You don't have the problem of drunken drivers, for example.
Right.
They may be noisy, but doesn't seem to erupt into conflict. It's still a very good atmosphere, even if it's a bit of a noisy atmosphere in the centre of the city.
It does sound as though Prague's trying to focus on bringing in higher spending tourists, including those coming in for business meetings and so on now.
It's a good place for conferences. We've held a number of conferences there ourselves, and people love coming to Prague for a conference because they get to see the beauty of the city. The new leadership in the city, which is actually the Pirate Party is now leading it, is also very dedicated towards turning into like a green city and ensure very good sort of, you know, recycling and commitment to a low carbon footprint of the city.
So people are quite enthusiastic about the Pirate Party.
Well, in Prague, I'd say yes. It's like the alternative to the old-style politics, I think. It's a fresh approach. It's like a lot of young people in there. They're not, like, fixed to one particular ideology. I think they're very practically based, like how to make things work. So in Prague, yes, the Pirate Party has done very, very well. And the rest of the country, Czech Republic, I think, is a little bit different. There's more, you know, in the rural areas, there's slightly different tendencies to support the traditional parties.
Yes, yes, which is, you know, universal, isn't it, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Alan, yep. You would recommend friends from New Zealand do what when they're in Prague?
It's very safe to walk around. It's beautiful, whether it's day or night. In the nighttime, they light up the buildings beautifully. There are so many just like little nooks and crannies you can find. You get lost in the middle of the old town, but that's fine. It's a wonderful place to get lost. And then eventually you'll find your way out of there. I think it's just a wonderful place just to hang out.
And you've got the castle and the Charles Bridge and as you say, the old town.
And there's lots of museums that you can just pop into, very interesting, different types of museums. It's very nice just to hang out there.
How about the pretty traditional Prague food? You know, the sort of stick-to-your-ribs dishes like goulash and pork and dumplings. You couldn't afford to eat that every day of the week, probably.
Yeah, well, I'm vegetarian. And traditionally, they basically have fried cheese and what else? Oh, beetroot salad. And that's about it for the traditional food. But I'm in Prague, and Prague has one of the highest numbers of vegetarian restaurants in the world.
I didn't know that. Prague was recently rated Europe's second best city for new university graduates entering the workforce, and the Czech Republic's maintained Europe's lowest unemployment for years. There's clearly a lot being done, right?
Yeah, the economy is very good. The universities are very good. There's a variety of universities in Prague. Some are geared for Czech, primarily people, and others are geared for internationals, and there's a mix. We get a lot of interns. Many of the universities, they have to do internships with organisations, and we're one of the civil society non-profit organisations that they really appreciate having an internship with us.
Okay. But in terms of living, prices are quite high if you're looking to buy a house. What's your living situation in Prague?
The house prices are like comparable, I think, with other countries in Europe. The living costs are less. So it's still cheaper to live in Prague than it is, say, to live in Germany or Switzerland. And I'm living with my girlfriend in her apartment that she bought at a low price, and it was old, and we're building it up, redoing it, reconstructing it.
What's the general cost of living for things like groceries and utilities?
I would say probably for groceries about half the price of Wellington.
And you'd never need to drive.
I don't own a car. The public transport within the city is fantastic, and then going to other towns is really good, buses and trains also. If you need a car, we use one of the car sharing facilities.
All right.
You need a car to pick stuff up, and they're very good.
You're painting a glowing picture of Prague as a place to visit or even as a place to live. No language problems?
Not in Prague. I can't speak Czech. It's a very difficult language, but I have no problems in Prague.
The various bodies, organisations that you are prominent in, Parliamentarians for Nuclear Non-Proliferation and Disarmament, Unfold Zero, Move the Nuclear Weapons Money. How do you allot your time in terms of how you prioritise what you do?
Yeah, I think there's a question before that is why are there different approaches to nuclear disarmament rather than just one approach?
Yes, that's right.
Because people often ask that. And it's because the nuclear weapons are not really a military weapon. They're a political weapon. They're not being used out in the battlefield at the moment in conflicts. They're being used by governments to sort of force concessions from other governments to provide security. So for that reason, you have to deal a lot with the various reasons and the political reasons, financial reasons that go into the whole nuclear arms race. So that's why we have a number of different organisations that are focusing on different aspects of that question. I'm the coordinator for Parliamentarians for Nuclear Non-Proliferation and Disarmament, and that's really important to get legislators, parliamentarians, to adopt good policy. Then I'm one of the co-founders of Move the Nuclear Weapons Money, which looks at the role of the corporate interest in the arms race, the 27 public companies in the world that are making a killing out of making nuclear weapons and are pushing for more money for nuclear weapons, so we're addressing that issue. And then the other one is how do you have security without nuclear weapons and how do you achieve nuclear disarmament? And that's where we have Unfold Zero, which is looking at the initiatives at the United Nations for nuclear disarmament and for resolving conflicts peacefully.
Okay, that's usefully explained. Thank you. Are the ears getting less deaf, if you know what I mean, as you make your way around the world? I can tell you're optimistic. Do you feel that people are listening more and more?
I think we have two different directions. You know, one's positive and one's... People are really interested in broadening the approach to peace and not just leaving it up to the governments. So cities are becoming more involved in peace processes and money, investments. And the new millennials are really looking at now their investments as to not just to make money, but to do good in the world. So there's a lot of open ears for all those processes, and that's really exciting. The negative side is that the social media and manipulation of media has created silos in terms of the way that people are looking at events, and it's making dialogue across the different perspectives much more difficult. We need to talk with each other even if we disagree and even if we have different news sources.
It's a noble crusade and, you know, you've been certainly recognised for it, but I imagine it's also a wearisome one at times, certainly demanding. Can you see yourself doing it for the next 30 years, 40 years?
You know, climate is really important also, and more we're making the connections between progress on nuclear disarmament and protection of the climate. That could be if we reducing the nuclear weapons budget, we've got financing for climate. So I'm sort of shifting a little bit more onto the climate side, but not giving up on the nuclear weapons one yet. But I would hope that the nuclear weapons issue would be resolved within the next decade.
I always ask people what they miss most about their home country, which is always our country, of course. What is it for you?
Our family, I think. It's hard being away for most of the year from my family.
Yeah, I understand. All right. Hey, lovely to catch you in the middle of a very busy time, and thank you very much for joining us on Calling Home.
Thank you so much.